From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum this morning, we open with response to news from Lawrence Livermore National Labs National Ignition Facility of what is being called a breakthrough in nuclear fusion. Then at 9:30, our focus will be on mammography and a new study out of Canada, which followed 90,000 women over the age of 25. The study raises serious questions about the value of mammograms. Forum is next. Join us after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. By using a giant laser, scientists with the National Ignition Facility at Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory say they've made a major breakthrough in the quest for nuclear fusion. The multi-billion dollar taxpayer-funded laser was built with the goal of creating nuclear ignition, a potential source of clean energy in the future. We want to discuss, what is again being described as a breakthrough. With us in studio is Amy Standen, who is a reporter for KQED Science. And welcome, Amy.
Hi, Michael. Good to be here.
Good to have you here. Well, it seems to be exciting news, but we've heard breakthroughs in fusion before. What does this breakthrough mean, and have we broken through?
Well, if I can back up just a little bit and talk about the science here, because it's so fun to talk about. I mean, this is a project of just endless superlatives. It's the National Ignition Facility houses what is collectively the world's most powerful laser, 192 lasers, the size of 3 football fields, all directed at one tiny target smaller than a single peppercorn. And the idea is that if you can take the force from all of these lasers and direct it at this tiny little capsule filled with a kind of hydrogen gas, you can cause nuclear fusion. So the hydrogen atoms to fuse together, releasing a lot of energy.
Become helium atoms?
Become helium atoms and release energy, a good more than you put in. And we'll come back to that in a minute. But I think what's important to distinguish at the top is this is different from nuclear fission, which happens every day in power plants. This is not the atoms separating. It's the atoms colliding together.
It's not hydrogen bombs.
It is also not a hydrogen bomb.
Oh, you mentioned nuclear fission. I'm sorry. I couldn't
resist. Well, we have also had fusion bombs, which are tremendously powerful, and thankfully.
But not nuclear fission.
This is not nuclear fission. This is nuclear fusion. And the goal is to not just create an event of nuclear fusion, but to create a chain reaction of them. So the energy released by a few of these atoms merging would create the next fusion of hydrogen atoms, and then you would have ignition. Of course, we're talking about the National Ignition Facility. Achieving ignition has always been the goal. That is not what happened last October.
That produces more energy than the laser puts in.
Exactly. And what's been, I mean, we'll hear from the scientists in a bit, but as I understand it, what's happened is they were able to create fusion reactions that created more energy than had reached the target. But that is not the same as more energy than was directed at the target. And all along, I mean, a big challenge of this has been taking this spectacular amount of energy, and it's a huge achievement of NIFS that they've been able to create these lasers, and direct them at this little pellet so symmetrically that you're not picture squeezing a water balloon, right? That's what you don't want to do. You want to hit all sides of this pellet at the same time,
simultaneously,
so that the pressure is strong enough to create this ignition. And that has proven tremendously hard to do, not just at NIF, but for literally generations of scientists who have tried and failed to achieve this in a laboratory.
Could I ask you to help us sort through this a bit, though, because the man with the fascinating name of Hurricane, who's a researcher in this, says that more energy came out of the fusion than was put in. But then we have some naysayers, Steve Crowley out of the UK, saying no, it didn't actually let more fusion out as a result.
I would let the scientists address that, but my understanding is that what is still not happening, like I said, this is a tremendous amount of energy being directed at this tiny capsule. More energy has not been created than was directed. In other words, the amount of energy created in this event does not exceed those 192 lasers. Again, the scientists will refine that thinking. But, I mean, there has been criticism of this project all along on a number of grounds. And
I read your article. In fact, the mother of all boondoggles, somebody called it.
Yes, somebody, not me. Yes. This has been a very expensive project. This is the country's most expensive or if not one of the most, if not the most expensive basic science research projects happening in the States. And there are critics who say, you know, why are we putting so much money into something that has never worked and that some say still is not going to work? And they also say, why exactly are we doing that? And there have been a couple of different sort of competing narratives about the purpose of this project. And that has generated, I think, some of the controversy around it.
There were also some deadlines that were passed through this project's metamorphosis.
Yeah, well, NIF was dedicated in 2009. The lasers came on a little while afterwards. And initially, what you had people saying, you know, Governor Schwarzenegger was there saying, we think we're going to get to ignition in a couple of years. And so, you know, we were hearing 2011, 2012. That deadline came and went without ignition. There was a lot of negative press about it. And Ed Moses, the director, was very much on the defensive about that. But, you know, what's been said by the people at Moses and others at NIF is, you know, this is grand challenge science. That's the phrase you hear. This is revolutionary science. You can't put a timeline on it. You can't put a price tag on it. This is world changing stuff. And I think it's whether or not you agree with that is going to determine sort of where you stand on this debate.
But how excited should we be about what happened recently about this news, in fact, because for a while they were talking about replicating the power of the sun and the stars and all of that sort of thing. I mean, a new way of energy, of providing energy.
Well, what happens inside the sun is a chain reaction. It's ignition. It's a continuous nuclear fusion process. And again, that's not what happened at NIF.
So that's what they're aiming for, of course.
That's what they're aiming for. Sun in a bottle, a star in a bottle. I mean, that's the hyperbole here. And if you get ignition, that's not just hyperbole. That's what's happening. But it's not what's happened yet. And, you know, you alluded to clean energy. If we could achieve this in a lab, theoretically, that is the technology that could lead to it's sort of the holy grail of clean energy, endless, cheap, clean energy that could power the whole world forever, right? Imagine that. But even getting to ignition in the lab, the critics say, even if NIF can pull this off, how long is it going to take to scale that up to working power plants across the country that are, you know, safe and affordable? Decades. And on the scale of climate change, you know, that's maybe more time than we have. This is not me talking. This is critics talking. You know, it sort of depends where you fall on that continuum.
KQED science reporter Amy Standen with us in studio. Also with us for this segment, a couple of Lawrence Livermore scientists. Paul Springer is a physicist and co-author of the recent fusion results. He joins us from Lawrence Livermore. Good to have you with us. Welcome.
Thank you very much.
Also want to welcome Denise Hinkle, who is a physicist and also a co-author of the recent fusion results and joins us from Lawrence Livermore. Good morning.
Thank you.
And actually, Denise Hinkle, let me go to you if I could. Pretty happy there at NIF about this and maybe cautiously optimistic?
Cautiously optimistic is a fantastic phrase to use.
And yes. But excited nonetheless. So tell us about your excitement. It's generating a lot of energy, I know, but yeah.
Yes, it is. And it, you know, physicists have been, this has been their dream for a number of years. And there's been a lot of people that have put their career into working on this. And every time somebody makes a step forward, we're able to build on their progress. And so you can think about building our progress as built on the shoulders of the people that made progress before us. And so there's the entire international community is really very enthusiastic and supportive about this.
Well, how much, Paul Springer, does this vindicate all of the concern about waste of taxpayer money because you couldn't get hydrogen to fuse? I mean, is this strongly compensatory at this point?
I'd say it's a very good sign. I mean, what we're seeing now is that we understand what went wrong with the previous experiments, and we have made changes to, you know, sort of to circumvent that. Now we're getting agreement with our models and that we know what to do in the models in order to improve the performance. So we have what looks like a very good sign. We see evidence of the self-heating, which is required to get ignition, and we have a short-term path forward, you know, where we know what to do to, you know, to change it, to improve it.
Wasn't this initially built, let me take you back for a moment, to study the dynamics of nuclear explosions for the National Nuclear Security Administration? In other words, also to essentially test the nuclear stockpile.
Yeah, I think that's a good part of it. I mean, essentially, the NIF does more than just fusion. You know, so there you can get to the energy densities and radiation temperatures that you need to use in order to understand those processes. And the same is true with planetary physics, stellar physics, with science. So it has like a three-pronged mission, and ignition is one of it.
Denise Hinkle, actually, to create self-sustaining fusion reactions, you need hydrogen temperatures, as I understand, about hundreds of millions of degrees, and also need a much greater sense of, about 1,000 greater pressure than you have now.
Yes, that is correct. But where we are now, we're seeing evidence of alpha heating, as Paul Springer mentioned a few moments ago, and we're in a regime where that's going to take off exponentially. And so getting this first doubling because of alpha heating is an important milestone, but it's not a linear process. It's going to exponentiate and amplify at a much more rapid rate as we improve our conditions, as we get closer to that 50 million degrees C and the 150 billion Earth atmosphere pressures. We're at 150 billion now. We need to double that. We need to get to about 300 billion.
How hard is that to do, in your judgment?
Well, you know, we can't exactly say, because this is a frontier. We've never done this before. We think we have a path forward, as Paul indicated a few moments ago, but it's science, and science is a series of successes and failures. And that's what it's all about. It has its own timeline. And we think that we can make progress towards that. It's been likened by our team lead, Omar Hurricane, to climbing Mount Kilimanjaro. We know we're going up the slope, but the peak is in the clouds. You can't really see it, but you know you're closer. And that's sort of where we are right now. We know we're a lot closer. We see the path upward, but we don't really know where that peak is.
Well, Paul Springer, you described that peak as, let me go back for a moment to the fact that in 1992 there was a moratorium on testing for the United States. And you said it's like you have a car and you're studying it, but you're not permitted to start it.
Right, yeah. So, I mean, and I come to that because I drive an old VW, and they are a challenge to get going as they age. Things change. And it's very important, you know, when things change, is to be able to test that it still works. And so you can't test that. You know, essentially you can't tune up the car by starting it and listening to the engine. You have to understand it on a much more fundamental scientific basis as things change. And I think the same thing is true with anything that changes, and it's certainly true, you know, with the stockpile in particular, with young scientists that are coming into it and don't have the experience. And so basically they can, you know, learn and, you know, make any mistakes or things that they have to do to develop their experience on a system like NIF, where they can test their ideas on a small scale and know that they scale, you know, hydrodynamically or whatever they're scaling in a way that has closest to high fidelity to what they need to understand.
We're talking to two of the co-authors of the recent fusion results out of Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory, Paul Springer and Denise Hinkle, and Amy Standen, our own KQED science reporter, with us. And you can be with us as well. In fact, let me get your response to what you're hearing here, and let me get your thoughts and questions and comments. You can join us toll-free. Our toll-free number is available. 866-733-6786 is the number to call, and we do welcome your calls and invite them. Again, toll-free, join us now at 866-733-6786 if you have thoughts about the giant laser producing nuclear fusion. Big news out of Lawrence Livermore. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or go to our website, which is kqed.org/forum, and simply click on this segment or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. And let me go to some comments on our Facebook page. Noah says, LOL, I was working on this project 17 years ago when it was also claiming the same thing. Alyssa writes, please, oh, please, oh, please, oh, please be true. You have, Amy, that kind of concern. I mean, we've been this terrain before, many people feel.
They do, and I think maybe to the non-scientists, it all sort of sounds the same. I mean, we heard a very enthusiastic press releases from NIF when the lasers achieved a record-breaking amount of power. That's a different announcement than what's coming out today. And these are very real benchmarks for the project. And no, it's still not ignition, which is the thing that would get everyone most excited. But you know, like the scientists are saying, these are steps toward it. So I think ignition is something that really kind of captures the imagination of people. Like we've all been saying, this is something generations of scientists have tried to do. And to do it here, to do it in America, there are competing efforts in France right now, would be, for a lot of people, very exciting.
Well, if it's Mount Kilimanjaro, we're at least off the ground, maybe, huh?
Think so, yeah. At least.
Can you please ask your guests, a listener writes, what they did differently this time around to achieve ignition? I mean, it's an interesting way the question is fused. You didn't achieve ignition, really. You
right.
achieved fusion, but I think maybe the same question is applicable.
So, yeah. So I think I can address that. Basically, when the in the early experiments, we were optimizing the laser pulse in order to compress the hydrogen to its highest possible density. That is theoretically where you want to be if you can control everything else, because what you need is a high pressure, which is basically a high density, and then the self-heating. The problem is that when you do that, the target is unstable. It actually comes apart in, you know, as you're pushing it in, and the hydrogen, instead of getting pressed, it's like the balloon where you're squeezing it. It actually squeezes out through little gaps and holes. And so what we did is we gave the hydrogen a little bit more energy by the high foot, which basically makes it, it puts more energy in there to begin with, and it's a lower compression, but it's much more hydrodynamically stable, 10 times more. And so we can get to the point where we're getting to see what the other issues with shape and other things that we also need to control in a way that we can understand with the models. When things are coming apart, it's very difficult to figure out the details of everything that you need to do. So right now we're at a point that is, you know, that we understand and we can make progress from here, maybe going back towards making the fuel more dense. You know, essentially, this additional factor of order two in pressure is simply making the fuel more dense. So you can start out with it more dense, you can make it rounder, you can send it in with a higher velocity. Those are the avenues that we're pursuing to improve the performance.
And again, Paul Springer is one of the co-authors of the recent fusion results of physicists at Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory. Amy Stannis.
I just wanted to jump in with a metaphor that I found really useful in trying to understand what they're trying to do here. Everyone's been talking about this little tiny, tiny target at the center of this operation. In the space of less than, and correct me if I have this wrong, less than 1/200 millionth of a second, the aim is to collapse this pellet, the equivalent as if it had started out like a basketball and ended up like a pea.
Yes,
that's correct.
Okay.
Okay, we'll go to your calls. And
hard
let's
to
begin.
Do.
Well, yeah, hard to do is right. Nicholas, good morning. You're on.
Yes, I'm a physicist engineer in California, and I guess in some ways I'm appalled that we still are talking about clean energy from fusion reactions. And I really think that this discussion would be better made if we just talk about how this will be, you know, great science like the Large Hadron Collider, or understanding of making sure that people, you know, we have fusion engineers in the United States. I think that's all wonderful, but we really should stop discussing and talking about how this is going to be producing clean and safe energy when it produces just as much radiation as any other nuclear power.
Yeah, I think Nicholas brings up an important point, Amy Stannis. I mean, it reminds me of the expectations with stem cells in many ways. I mean, they just become so inflated and exponential.
Well, I mean, the difference I would venture with stem cells is that we were always told it was a science project around medicine, the goal being treatments for people. And no, that hasn't really panned out quite yet. But with NIF, you have this question, and the caller alluded to this, is this about nuclear weapons? Is this about clean energy? Or is this about basic science? And sometimes it has felt like when one of those narratives sort of falls apart, we see this shifting to the other one. And then when that one looks a little unstable, we hear about the other one. Or if, you know, here we are in Northern California, we hear a lot about clean energy. I think that's where the analogy to stem cells doesn't quite
hold. I was just thinking
on.
About it. Stem cells is the panacea for so many different diseases, and now we're thinking about this as a solution to all of our energy problems. We're probably thinking too far out of the box.
It makes sense that in some far distant future, this could be the solution to our energy problems, as I understand it. But we're so far away from that, that it may not be a useful way to talk about what's happening right now in Livermore.
Let me bring another caller on here from Berkeley. Kevin, join us. You're on the air.
Hi, this is Kevin. Hi. I did some research a couple years ago into the Astron project, which was done around 1960 at Lawrence Livermore. And it was a fusion project led by kind of an odd scientist named Christofilos. And the whole thing was a giant boondoggle, but Lawrence Livermore and Lawrence himself got involved in this and spent billions of dollars trying to contain fusion back there. And they ended up scrapping the whole thing. And actually, as a side note, they ended up exploding a lot of hydrogen bombs in space to test magnetic field lines and all kind of other military research. And it strikes me that Livermore is a genealogy of chasing this kind of fantasy along, and it ends up leading into places we really don't want to go that aren't really very fruitful. And it seems to me like this, you know, this project, while it sounds interesting, maintains a genealogy to a time of big science at Livermore, you know, conflated with a lot of military spending and a lot of boondoggle.
Denise Hinkle, you want to respond to the caller?
Yes. So I'm sorry, but the Astron project really does sort of predate me. But in general, I could make some general comments about the last two phone calls. I think the wonderful thing about this project is that it does have multiple objectives. There's the scientific merit of this project of showing proof of principle of ignition. Just showing the proof of principle in and of itself is a wonderful endeavor. And if we can do that, then we open up other avenues and other doors, and we can think about, using it for other things like clean energy. But it also serves the purpose for stockpile stewardship. And so to be involved in, you know, a project that has multiple objectives is marvelous. And I think that that's a very important aspect of this whole thing.
We're getting a lot of questions about all of those different objectives, but let me go to one from Ben, who writes on our website and wants to know if this is dangerous to test so near a huge population. Amy Stanton?
I mean, I would leave that to the nuclear physicists, but no, this is not. There, yes, people initially were saying they're going to create a black hole and it will swallow all of Livermore. No, that's not going to happen.
We use a very small amount.
Paul Springer, go ahead. Yeah.
We use a very small amount of fuel. Even if this thing ignites to its theoretical maximum, it would be of order 20 megajoules, so 10 times the energy that goes out, and it's only burning about 5 micrograms of DT.
So another listener, Pat, wants to know, what's the role of the program in the Nuclear Weapons Stewardship Program? We've got about a minute left. Can you take that, Paul Springer?
Well, so even without ignition, NIF does a lot of things in terms of getting high pressure, high radiation temperatures, and you can do experiments, you know, basically to test what the effects of aging and things like that do. The achieving ignition, you know, basically is a test of our ability to make predictions. And I think, previously when we had codes that would not agree with the data on NIF, it was very disconcerting because we use the same type of system for our stockpile.
All right, I want to end with a tweet from David who says, we shot for the moon and made it. Good work shooting for nuclear fusion, especially important considering the need for clean energy. Thank you, Amy Stanton. Thank you, Paul Springer. Thank you, Denise Hinkle. And another forum segment when we return, we're going to turn to a new study on mammography. Stay with us. I'm Michael Krasny.